From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. You're with Ross Cameron on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Well, g'day, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. It's great to have your company on this, the 20th anniversary to the day of the invasion of Iraq by a coalition of the willing, led by George H.W. Bush, in which Australia participated, in which indeed I was a member of the Australian Federal Parliament under John Howard. At the time, Australia made the decision to join the coalition of the willing. It was a mistake. It was an error. And we ought to be aware of the fact that since human beings enjoy some measure of free will, that we're capable of making mistakes. And I suppose, you know, the test of an individual, of a company, of a government is how quickly it can learn from its mistakes. And I suppose it's worth asking, two decades on, how much we learned. Because the war in Iraq was indeed just the first among a sequence, one after another, one might even say a pattern of avoidable wars. And pattern recognition is indeed regarded as one of the evidences of intelligence, where we see a pattern emerging but fail to recognize its elements and features, we show a lack of intelligence. Raises the interesting question about what is a human being. And this has been the subject of quite a bit of discussion and speculation since ancient times. Indeed, Aristotle is sometimes ascribed with the definition of the human as a rational animal. But I think scholars would dissent from that attribution. Aristotle recognized a rational principle in humans, which he said was the key distinguishing feature between humans and other animals. But it was Chrysippus, the third of the great Stoics after Zeno and Cleanthes, who described humans, perhaps optimistically, as rational animals. But we find that we talk at times about the thin blue line, which police like to use to describe themselves as the distance between civility and barbarity. Yet we see in Melbourne yesterday a protest in which it's increasingly difficult to determine whether the police are part of the civility or the barbarity. We'll have an eyewitness to the Melbourne protests on the show, our second guest, in just about 25 minutes. But I just want to say that I feel like I'm broadcasting to you from the balcony of Nero's palace as he climbed the steps to get a better view of the great fire of Rome. Some argument about whether or not Nero lit the fire. He certainly celebrated it. He certainly participated in a disinformation campaign to blame Christians for it. He certainly held the desire to, quote, build back better the city of Rome. And he felt that the so-called slums of Rome were an impediment to his grand design. And so when he saw the inferno, the conflagration, he went and changed into a theatrical costume and began playing a musical instrument and reciting a poem on the glory of the destruction of Troy. And I confess to you that I feel a little bit of the echo of that music and that poem in my ears as I watch the self-harm being meted out on citizens of Australia of the United States, of the Western countries more generally, whose leadership could collectively be called the self-harm brigade. After this break, we're going to come back with Joel Jamal from Turning Point Australia, who is actually manning the hoses, trying to put out the fire. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
What does that tell you when one side of the debate doesn't actually want to address the merits of an argument, but they want to smear, slander, cancel, defund, and deplatform anyone who challenges their narrative, so to speak?
It means that they have no interest in the truth and they have a political agenda and they promote it with propaganda.
So tell me a little bit about why you feel you're uniquely qualified to write this kind of a book.
I feel that I'm qualified because I've spent 2 years writing it. And there are 800 footnotes, so if anyone disagrees or questions where the information came from, that's fine. By the way, I'm only a student. I didn't do any of these tests. I just read about them. And most all of the information comes directly from the U.S. government. If we actually look at what the NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and the EPA and NASA, what they actually found when they did their studies, everyone would agree with what we're promoting, that there is no problem. There's no problem with global warming. There's no problem with the seas rising or accelerating. And all of the other claims are just totally false.
The Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war on our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and lies in American education at salemnow.com.
In a world of propaganda, the truth is always a conspiracy. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, g'day, welcome back. And one of the rising stocks, we see stocks just about everywhere falling, but one of the rising stocks on what I would describe as the rational right libertarian side, who are trying to save what is being destroyed and hopefully to build something of value, built around nature, built around private property, built around conscience, built around freedom of choice, opinion, and speech, is Joel Jamal from Turning Point Australia. I'm delighted that Joel has been able to join us. Are you with us, mate?
Yes, I'm here. How are you going?
Doing your duty at your post. I'm going well.
very good. Good to be here.
Joel, why don't you just assume that our audience knows nothing about Turning Point and give us the quick biography of Turning Point. What exactly are you trying to turn?
Yeah, sure. So Turning Point USA is the first organization that was started by Charlie Kirk. He started it in the university campuses, the factory of all bad ideas, where the cultural Marxists have basically used that as a springboard to capture the mind of the American people. And the rise of Turning Point in the USA has been over the last 10 years. In Australia, it's come at a bit of an awkward time. It started in mid-2021. In the midst of some of the darkest years in Australia's history, where we shut down our churches, we shut down all forms of gathering, and it was really born out of the freedom movement. And so it's a slightly different rise to the American turning point, but we are the official turning point for Australia. And there are a few different hats that I wear as the head of Turning Point. I'm a journalist, I'm a political commentator, and I'm a political activist, which is quite topical considering New South Wales, our most populous state, has an election coming up in a week.
Yes, and I see that... You say you wear a number of different hats, and I see Turning Point does a number of different things, in particular in the election context. And you have become regarded as a kind of honest broker among the various fragments of the freedom movement. And I think you have – the thing that has impressed me about Turning Point is the strategic insight that we can have lots of – really well-intentioned and quite courageous individuals and splinter groups. But when it comes to the election, which we're facing, for example, in New South Wales in the next 6 days, indeed all of the pre-poll booths are already open, you have turned your mind to the question of how we avoid this fragmentation and splintering of the vote, where we wind up having enough votes across the freedom movement as a whole to get good people elected to parliament. Yet when it comes to actually marking the ballot paper, we wind up in these silos, wasting our preferences. And the primary votes may add up to a substantial number, but in the final count, we fall short. And I feel like Turning Point is one has been among the early adopters of trying to find a way to more effectively harness the freedom vote. So tell us, what is your approach to that question?
Yeah, look, it's certainly not a new concept. I mean, after all, the Liberal Party was a coddling together of dozens of minor parties and through Menzies. And one thing we've noticed in the last probably 4 years is people are genuinely getting frustrated with a disorganized Liberal Party that doesn't know what it stands for. It's completely strayed from the We Believe statement, hence the rise of all these minor parties, and they've all got their own virtue in a way. But in the federal election, we saw 10 freedom parties run with a combined vote of about 15% in every state around the country. In Victoria, we saw a similar situation where they had 9 freedom parties run. But the splintering of the vote meant that they didn't manage to capture the balance of power in the upper house. In New South Wales, though, we've been a lot more active as a virtue of the way the cards have landed. In New South Wales, there is a very difficult registration process with regards to becoming a party, and so as a result, there's only 4 what we call freedom parties that are running. And, you know, these are parties that are, you know, classically characterized as being conservative, Christian, and also have a freedom sort of streak in them as well. And so we do have a range of different resources which highlight the stark differences between major parties and minor parties. And it really highlights how idiotic it is that many of these minor conviction parties, they're not working together. And so this election, Turning Point's had a lot more of an active role engaging in finding candidates, making sure that these freedom parties don't run in the same seats as each other, rather than, you know, split the vote, have all of these candidates sort of get behind one candidate in each seat. And so we did have a role in making sure that there wasn't the stepping of toes, which typically happened in Victoria or in the federal election. And on top of that, just ensuring that there is that preference discipline. In New South Wales, the Animal Justice Party, the Greens and Labor, they are all in the top 3 of each other's preferences. That means they're sticking together. There will be very little wastage between them. They are a successful bloc, and they are the nightmare scenario in the event that these minor parties do not preference each other on the right side of politics. And so, look, Turning Point, the most good that I can do personally and as an organisation in through Turning Point Australia is by being that honest broker, by being outside of the party system and making sure that people are getting reliable information, and the voters understand exactly which parties are standing for what.
Well, in that regard, I mean, there's two things I want to go to. One is Turning Point's role in producing how to vote cards, because we know, particularly under compulsory voting, there's a lot of people, about 12%, walk into the polling booth not actually knowing who they're going to vote for, because they're being forced to vote. They don't want to vote, but they're only there to avoid a fine. And you have kind of gone to the trouble of producing a freedom how to vote card for each of the 93 lower house seats in the coming New South Wales election, and indeed for the upper house seat. You haven't done it. You haven't produced your how to vote recommendations by just, you know, sticking your finger in your mouth and putting it up to the wind. You've engaged in an empirical process in which the parties themselves tell you where they should be ranked in relation to about 26 questions. How many questions do you send in the Turning Point survey for the election policy matrix?
26, that's right, in six different categories, ethics, energy and environment, public health and wellbeing, education, economics and reviving New South Wales, and democracy.
Okay, so for our listeners, if you just, while you're following along in the conversation, if you want to see the visual of Turning Point's policy matrix results for each of the different parties, you can go to tpost.com.au. You can read the questions for yourself and you can see the results. But why don't we just quickly run through, I mean, it'll just take us a minute or two, if we go through the first, say, five questions. You said, what's the first one is, do you say it's ethics? What's the first? Under so, ethics, you've got four questions. What are they?
Will you act to remove abortion to birth legislation? Do healthcare professionals have a right to discourage medical and surgical and intervention in LGBT patients? Do you oppose gender-affirming care for LGBTQ plus minors? Do you have a commitment to restore freedom of religion?
Okay, so each candidate then has to sit there and figure out what is their answer to those questions. Let's go to energy and environmental preparation, getting down to the granular details. What are the four questions Turning Point asks candidates on energy and environmental?
Yeah, so these are specifically sent to the heads of parties. The questions for this one is, do you oppose net zero emission targets? Will you commit to defending jobs in the natural resource industry? Will you oppose sanctions on the New South Wales population in the name of climate change, such as energy rationing, physical or financial restrictions? Do you support the exploration of nuclear energy?
Okay. Well, I'd be interested to find out, you know, if you found, if there were any surprises, you know, when we get to the final results. But if we then go to education, okay, give us your two education questions.
Yeah, sure. It was, are you committed to restoring parental consent and authority over what kids are exposed to in the curriculum? And do you believe religious schools should have the right to refuse to hire non-religious employees?
Okay, very good. Well, I know that you don't avoid the sort of meat and three veg economics. And we're in a situation where we've got a government which is in, under the Liberal Party in New South Wales, increasingly bloated with debt, as indeed we found in the federal election, that the Liberal Party under Josh Frydenberg as Treasurer, in my judgment, could not have acquired debt faster than the Labor Party might have. What are your questions on economics and reviving New South Wales?
Sure. Do you oppose raising the GST? Are you committed to push for necessary audits to reduce government spending and increase transparency? Will you act to reduce inflation by any practical means available to you? Do you have a policy to address housing problems, re-affordability, property development, or home ownership? Are you opposed to smart cities?
Okay, so what's the word, the expression smart cities? Sounds like, you know, one would, a rational person would prefer a smart city to a dumb city. Mm. What's your problem with smart cities?
Sure. Well, it's a growing issue that's, it's basically coming out of Europe and a lot of those NGO organizations in that are basically trying to influence what Australian councils, local governments, federal governments, and state governments are doing with regards to surveillance of people, increased surveillance over the way that people travel, increased tracking, increased watching over people's transactions and use over money. A lot of these things are anti-democratic. People are opposed to them. They don't understand why this is necessary for a free and fair Australia. And the last 3 years with COVID have just basically said, why would you give the government more power and turn it into a technocracy when, you know, you couldn't trust them during COVID?
Well, Joel, a lot of people are talking to me about, you mentioned that it's emerging out of Europe and, you know, the daft UK seems to be leading the charge. And we're hearing about these so-called 15-minute cities, which I confess to you send a chill up my spine when I look at the levels of coercion and compulsion which these state control freaks are actually contemplating, presumably in the name of limiting one's, quote, carbon footprint. What do we know about the so-called 15-minute city that we might be looking forward to?
Yeah, well, I actually remember studying this in university. They called it the 30-minute city. And it's basically the concept that anything you want is within 15 minutes. It's around the corner. So if we had to lock people down, the idea would be that everything you need is within 15 minutes of where you live. And so that has obviously eerie recollections for people to the pandemic and having those 5-kilometer zones. You can't be outside your 5-kilometer zones in Sydney. And so, yeah, looked at the idea would be that, you know, basically you're self-sufficient within 15 minutes.
And what the fear is, I think, that by combining this so-called 15-minute city there with the surveillance technology and the personalized sort of digital ID and the demand to limit one's carbon footprint, that we might actually be locked in to these cities, unable to move outside without the consent of some bureaucrat.
That's right.
That leads me into this issue of lockdowns, which, you know, on their benign interpretation, were necessary to, quote, contain the pandemic. On their worst interpretation, were just a dress rehearsal, a kind of psyops program to get people used to the idea that the government could force you to remain in your local government area, and indeed for the unvaccinated to be locked in their homes. Give us, under your democracy heading, you've got, you know, as a small d Democrat, and I disclose the fact that I'm a member of the Liberal Democrats political party, an elected official of the party. Run us through your questions on democracy to the political parties running in the New South Wales election.
Yeah, sure. So the first two are two questions on lockdowns. It's have you always opposed lockdowns in the past? For me personally, I would have a no for that. I was for the first lockdowns in 2020. Will you oppose all future lockdowns? That's the redeeming question. Do you support our constitutional right to protest without a permit, regardless of the cause? Do you support freedom of speech except to incite violence or dox someone's private details, putting their safety at risk? Do you support freedom of movement as written in the Constitution? Do you oppose protesters facing jail time for non-violent / mild disruptions to public order regarding blocking traffic? Are you preferencing value-aligned parties in the upper house? Ticket on your how-to-vote cards? And do the membership of your party get a vote on who is on the upper house ticket?
Well, why did Jael Jamals initially support the lockdown?
Well, it was the very first lockdown in March, I do believe it was. And I think, like most people, we just didn't know what was going on. We didn't understand. I was still in construction, in my defense. I wasn't a full truther at that point. But there were people like the leader of IMOP, Michael O'Neill, and obviously John Ruddick as well, who's running for the Liberal Democrats. They knew exactly what was going on, and their tweets vindicate them because of that. However, people like myself that were slow to the party, we've got to recognize that we got that wrong. And we did very easily fall into that, and perhaps we probably should have read up a bit more on history.
Well, brother, I forgive you because you've made a good confession. You've admitted you were sucked in. And indeed, Paul Keating this week said that the UK... in its new vision for global Britain, looking around for a bunch of suckers, in which group he includes his Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese. You were a sucker. But you've come good and you are redeeming yourself. We believe in redemption on TNT Radio. Tell us, what is your ad? So anyone who is a bit doubtful or confused about who they're going to vote for in the coming New South Wales election, if they want to support a Freedom candidate in their local electorate or in the New South Wales upper house, where we're desperate to avoid a Green Labor, animal justice phalanx in the upper house, which is entirely possible. What should people do if they want the advice of Turning Point on who to vote for?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, as I said, we just ran through 26 questions. That's what this is based off. And we also look at it. We do a character assessment on the upper house candidates that are running. And we also look at the strategy involved with the numbering of the cards, including defunding major parties. But I won't go into all of that. If you guys want a customized card exactly for your area, if you head to tpaust.com.au, you will notice that there's a website, there's an address lookup, rather, where you can actually find exactly what area you're in and what our recommendation is for you to vote in the lower house and the upper house. There are 61 or so independent candidates or conviction party candidates that are running this election. And it's in all of our interests that we back them in the lower house. And in the upper house, there's 6 grouped candidates that are running. One Nation, Liberal Democrats, the Informed Medical Options Party, the Shooters, Lyle Shelton as Group A, and Ricardo Bossi as Group U. These are people that if they were in Parliament, they would be doing a far better job than the majors. And if you want more information on that, you can see our policy matrix and see the stark difference in the answers to these questions compared to the major parties.
Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, there it is. Jael Jamal, Turning Point Australia. You can find him at tpos.com.au. Go to the site, download your own local electorate how to vote. Follow his advice in the upper house if you want to elect a Freedom candidate to the New South Wales Parliament and avoid a Green left phalanx in the New South Wales upper house. Thanks very much for being with us. Jael, stay with us now, ladies and gentlemen. In a minute, we are coming back with two of the great freedom warriors who were eyewitnesses at the protest in Melbourne just yesterday. We will have Kelly J. Keane and Catherine Deaves after we come back from this break.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
It really is getting hard to believe the stuff that comes out today. I'm not going to even call it disinformation. I'll call it half information. The Washington Post, you know, it used to be a great paper. It really did. I mean, I had a friend that worked for the Washington Post back in the 80s, and we would talk about their editorial board and how they always try to present the other side. But once again, the Washington Post is at it. They say the reason your allergies are getting worse in the United States is because of climate change, because springs are coming earlier. That is total unmitigated nonsense. All right. The last 15 years, there's been no significant change in U.S. March and April temperatures. In addition, it's amazing. We had a warm February in the United States. Guess what? The five-day period running up to the first day of spring, one of the coldest on records, especially in the Deep South. They don't even bother looking. It's the same story over and over and over again. Well, guess what? Maybe there are other reasons why allergies are worse, like what you're eating, what you're drinking, your general health. No, it's got to be blamed on climate change. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather we got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Solar power is supposed to help the environment. Modern economies require power 24/7, not just when the sun shines. And storing power is very expensive. Peak electricity demand in many nations with service-based economies occurs late in the day as the sun is setting. And cloud cover means we can never depend on solar power. Photovoltaic solar panel production is very resource intensive. Coal is the primary energy source used for photovoltaic panel production. And China, the world's biggest coal producer and consumer, produces two-thirds of the world's solar panels. While solar panels have a limited life of around 2 decades, some fail well before then. But nearly all solar panels currently go to landfill, as the cost of recycling is so high.
If you're talking about it,
cuts to Medicare and Social Security, they're off the table.
We're talking about
today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've got two sparkling guests for the next 20 minutes, Kelly J. Keane and Catherine Deves. Catherine, more well-known to the Australian audience. Kelly J. Keane visiting Australia at the moment. Rather than introducing you to them, I'm going to ask them to introduce each other. So, Catherine Deves, I would like you to introduce to the TNT audience, the Ross Cameron Show, Kelly J. Keane.
Good evening, Ross, and good evening, listeners. So, Kelly J. Keane is a women's rights advocate. She's come all the way from the UK to come out here to Australia to raise awareness of the encroachment onto women's sex-based rights in law and policy, of laws that seek to allow men to identify as women and then enter into our women's spaces, sports and services. And so far, Kelly has toured around Australia. She's just about to head to Hobart, Canberra and New Zealand.
Okay, magnificent. Great, Kelly J, to have you with us. If you were introducing Catherine Deves to someone who had never met her and knew nothing about her, what would you say?
Well, following on, good evening to you both. Following on from what Catherine said, you can just, if you just use her words, make me about a foot taller, much more beautiful, legally trained, and a shining light in Australia. And I think you've just about got Catherine Deves.
Okay, well, it sounds like a Unity ticket, Batman and Robin. We're not sure. You're both superheroes. Look, we've all, many of us have read the newspapers. We see some startling images of apparent Nazi salutes on the steps of the Victorian Parliament. And it seems like there was a three-way sort of fracas between Let Women Speak, in which Kelly J and Catherine were lead proponents. Then we had another group of protesters against Catherine and Kelly J. And then we had a third group, apparently, allegedly, Nazis, so-called neo-Nazis, who seem to be getting ushered up to the steps by the Victorian police, much like Nancy Pelosi's police officers were ushering the protesters into the US Congress. I read right now, I'm sitting in front of a statement from Josh Burns MP, the Labor member for McNamara, which I think has the highest concentration of Jewish representation. And he says, Chair of the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Human Rights, statement on neo-Nazis in Melbourne. the ugly alliance between anti-trans bullies and neo-Nazis on display in the city today was extremely confronting. And if I go to Daniel Andrews' Twitter feed, he says 9 hours ago, "I won't share a photo because they simply don't deserve the attention. But yesterday, anti-trans activists gathered to spread hate. On the steps of our parliament, some of them performed a Nazi salute." What does Kelly J have to say about that?
Well, for a start, what despicable people and disingenuous statements come out of the mouths of those two politicians. Clearly, nobody in any right mind or sort of moral place of good condones Nazi salutes. That would be preposterous. Nobody, I don't know anybody who wants to live in a civilized society that actually condones the actions of Nazis or the ideology. However, what's the biggest shame for me is that some incredibly brave women from right across the state came to Melbourne and beyond the state, actually, came to Melbourne to talk about the decimation of women's rights, women's sports, children's safeguarding, and they have been absolutely routinely ignored by those that want to pretend. Because I don't think anybody was there reporting. Any journalist of any value could have been in that vicinity and thought that Let Women Speak was associated with any of the other groups that were there, because we just plainly weren't. We weren't geographically. We weren't ideologically. There was no overlap whatsoever. So for anybody to suggest that there was any connection is, as far as I'm concerned, dishonest. And that's me being very careful with my words. So,
well,
go on. Sorry,
I'm going to read you some of the reactions to the Premier's tweet before I ask Catherine to actually give us the eyewitness sort of account of what happened. One says, "I don't agree with either group, but it's clear as day VicPol allowed this to go ahead. It was pre-planned. VicPol escorted Nazis to the steps of our parliament. Andrews would have also known this in advance. Disgusting." Somebody else asks a series of questions. Would you care to offer support to the women who have been defamed and threatened due to the Nazi and trans activists' presence? Or do these women who want women's rights not even enter your mind? Catherine Deaves, why don't you tell us, give us the eyewitness reporter's account of what actually happened at the protest?
Well, thanks, Ross. I would like to clarify something, but the Let Women Speak tour is Kelly J's campaign. I've just been fortunate enough to speak at a couple of them. But as to what happened yesterday, questions must be asked of the Victorian police and what on earth they were doing escorting these masked men into our cordon and allowing them to do that in such a heated atmosphere. Now, we had already been told by the police that the horses were being assaulted by the trans activists. The police were being a heated atmosphere. Now, we had already been told by the police that the horses were being assaulted by the trans activists. The police were being assaulted. The police were very spooked. They were very concerned. We had to wrap up our rally, our lawful rally, where we followed the rules and we liaised with the police. We had to leave early because they were concerned for our safety. We were being told that there were men there who wanted to assault us, and if particular individuals headed towards us, we needed to run. You know, and all you have to do is look at the optics. None of the women were looking at the masked men. We were watching the women. We were minding our own business, listening to our own very brave, very inspiring speakers. And if you look at where the police were, they were holding back the trans activists. Now, I haven't been scared like that. Oh, there's been a few times, but yesterday was really quite terrifying when we saw the TRAs pushing forward and the police having to hold them back. Now, I do have sympathy with the police having to deal with these disgusting, smelly, violent, aggressive individuals who were spitting. They were using like fart spray, which puts out this terrible stink. One woman was left with a concussion and had to go to hospital. It is very clear who the aggressors were. And we must keep in mind that all us women are doing is standing there and saying, we object to a legal framework that erases us in law and in life. And look at the reaction. Why are they so hell-bent on vilifying us to the point where we are called neo-Nazis, Nazi-adjacent, bigots, transphobes? They absolutely want to destroy us and destroy our reputation. And it's like, I say to your listeners, go and listen to what we're saying. Go and make up your own minds.
Nadine Van Cohen tweets, hi, Dan, Jewish woman and trans queer ally here. Are you going to condemn your police force for protecting Nazis yesterday, or are we just pretending that didn't happen? And they aren't anti-trans activists. Please call them. Police had to protect those who were being peaceful against those who weren't. The laws need to be changed to make what happened yesterday illegal. Jennifer says women came out to talk and two groups of people came out to protest against them. One of the groups were Nazis. Now, why were the Nazis ushered in by your police is the question. This needs investigating. Isaac says there, that's a start. Victorians deserve answers. Why did Victoria Police, one, escort the Nazis to the steps of Parliament? Two, not issue a move on order? Three, not arrest the Nazis for displaying Nazi symbolism in public? Four, assault Andy Medic, who is a member of Parliament? Look, I guess we should go to, since we have the benefit of you here, Kelly, why don't you tell us, how this journey began for you? Presumably, it's not the lifestyle that anyone would choose for themselves if they didn't feel an absolutely compelling duty to speak up at this time. Can you tell us just a little bit about your journey and what has happened to bring you to this moment in Melbourne and tonight on TNT Radio?
Well, back in 2015, I was firmly on the left and we voted in a Conservative government, and I was very happily in little echo chambers and had no idea that that was going to happen. So I joined online forums, and then what we found in the all women, women only online forums, is there were a lot of men in their sort of 50s and 60s who had recently decided that they were going to call themselves women, and I wasn't allowed to raise questions and ask about it. So as soon as that happened, as soon as I was told that I couldn't speak, I wanted to know why, and I wanted to really push that boundary, because I will not be told that I can't talk about being a woman. And I'd stayed at home with my four children for the last sort of 16 years at that point. And I just got, straight down the rabbit hole, and every sort of frontier that I thought would not be crossed by this particular ideology has been. So you find out that they're transitioning children, which sterilizes children, which absolutely eliminates their sexual function. You learn that these men are in women's prisons. You learn that these men are in women's sports. And every single place that women have fought long and hard to carve out for ourselves has actually been infiltrated and parasitically invaded by these men. And so I then put up a billboard in 2018 of the dictionary definition of the word woman in the UK. That was removed for hate speech. I've been interviewed under caution on three occasions. I've been arrested once, and I've had the police at my door. Most of the time it's for saying that women don't have penises, or you shouldn't castrate 16-year-old boys. And then one time the police came to my house to say that I was being untoward about paedophiles. And I've just been interviewed quite recently for some comments about saying that non-binary was very, very special in a very sarcastic tone. So what we then did with my activism is we realized that I was cancelled so much in the modern public square, which is online. So at one time I was banned from Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I couldn't sign a petition on change.org. I was banned from Mumsnet, banned from Patreon, all these places just for simply talking about the truth, the biological reality of being a woman. And so we started doing this thing. It's Let Women Speak, and it's reclaiming the public square one corner at a time. So we started in Speaker's Corner in London. Then we spread across the UK. Then I've done a tour of America, and now I'm in Australia, because it is it is absolutely textbook the same. The erasure of women's rights and the obliteration of children's safeguarding is exactly the same in your country, my country, the United States of America, Canada, Ireland. It's just the same. It's so frightening.
Well, I see. It's not just a in support of your thesis, Kelly J. We see that Australian basketball, women's basketball, is right now in a kind of crisis over the fact that someone who was born and grew up as a male, and presumably every year of his life was having his body produce 10 times the testosterone of any female competitor in basketball, has just applied to join the junior, just under the professional, of women's basketball. We've only got 3 minutes until the break, Catherine, but I wonder if mm-hmm. you can say what is your advice as a parent to Australian basketball as they convene to try and resolve this question?
Well, first of all, how dare they? How dare they betray the little girls and the young women who are assured of a female-only competition? Basketball Australia needs to grow some ovaries. They need to stand up to these trans activists, and they need to say the female category is for people who are born female and observed female at birth. If you are born male and observed male, you do not have a place in female sports. Go play in the mixed, go play in the men's, but they need to stand up. I understand the girls behind this are very distressed, but they are being silenced, and they're being told they'll lose their spot on the team, and they are being intimidated into not being able to stand up for their rights. That is gaslighting. So Basketball Australia needs to stand up for women and girls.
Well, it's an interesting thing to me, the way in which feminism, as an observer, seems to have been just steamrolled by this movement and has been fully colonized. And so many apparently sort of politically correct feminists are just like so many little lambs are bleating and saying, yeah, 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 this is good. We want a big, strong male body with male appendages wrapped in a skirt competing in our sports. We've got 1 minute left, Kelly J. What's your advice to feminists in this dispute?
Oh, goodness. I don't identify as a feminist, but I think what all women have to do is we have to put women first and children first. And that means that sometimes you're going to have to work alongside people that you don't like very much and you don't agree with on too many things. But this has to be an issue, a single issue, where we just stand together, we use the word no, and we mean it. And there is no compromise when it comes to children's safety and women's rights.
Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, that's Kelly J. Keene, Catherine Deves. Thanks for joining us tonight. Stick around, ladies and gentlemen. After the news, we'll come back with John Ruddock, Upper House candidate for the Liberal Democrats.